long as you're going in the right direction, you'll eventually get there.
Is he the president? Yes, yeah. No, talking about terrorism last night, this war. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because we have with us on the line our good friend Ron Brown. Hi, Ron. How you doing?
Good to be with you, next man.
Well, you know, I don't know if you heard the president talking last night, but he was talking about this $87 billion we're going to be using in our fight against terrorism and rebuilding Iraq after our successful fight on terrorism. You know, I was a little disturbed. I don't think he's read any of the government reports because I have government reports coming out in the year 2000 written by a fellow named Paul Bremer, who is the man that the president appointed to head Iraq. He's the chief macho over there, coordinating everything. And in 2000, he listed all the terrorist countries and Iran and Syria and Pakistan and Greece as helping terrorists. Didn't even mention Iraq. Talked about how these countries were really a threat to us. Didn't even mention Iraq. And yet, somehow or other, they're trying to convince the American people that this war in Iraq has to do with a war on terrorism. This war was planned at least in 1998, and it had to do with putting troops in the Middle East permanently. And anybody who doubts that has only to go to their website, newamericancentury.org. That's the project for the New American Century for Rumsfeld and Cheney and Wolfowitz and the other neocons had laid out a plan back in 1998 for a war with Iraq. And then it's just a matter of how do you sell it to the American people? Gee, maybe we ought to have a war on terrorism. And, you know, it's rather frightening. But, you know, what's the impact of, you know, another $87 billion on top of everything else? What's this going to do to our economy? What's this going to do to the average individual out there?
Well, obviously, we're at a point where the economy and the debt structure that we've been building since really 1913 when we created this thing called the Federal Reserve System, and the debt's just been building and building and building to the point it really has become a confidence game or a Ponzi scheme, because the only thing that holds it together is confidence. So right now they're just struggling to keep it from going into a deflationary downspin, which would destroy people's faith in the system. So, you know, you spend money wherever you can to try to create jobs, to try to get the economy going a little bit so the consumer will get back out there and keep spending.
But unfortunately, of course, as we've lost a little over 3 million jobs since George Bush became president. Now, that's not all his fault. That's part of this overall process of globalization. He supports it. Clinton supported it. The George W. the First supported it. In fact, the internationalists and the socialists have always supported this because they wanted to redistribute the American wealth. And that's what this is all about. That's what globalization is about. Transferring American wealth to other countries, and it doesn't make sense. I remember back in 1982, I was reading Socialist Affairs magazine, which is the official publication of the Socialist Internationale. And it's interesting that all of these elitist organizations, they all have a magazine, Rents and Affairs. The Royal Institute for International Affairs throughout the world publishes International Affairs, the Council on Foreign Relations, Foreign Affairs, the Communist Political Affairs, the Socialist Affairs. And they understand what's going on. They just hope that the public never understands that they all work together. But anyway, back in 1982, they had a big meeting down in CANCOM, and they were talking about how that Americans had so much, we had to redistribute their wealth throughout the world. And I, at the time, I thought, that's the craziest thing in the world I ever heard. The American people are never going to redistribute their wealth to the rest of the world. Let's help other people and bring their living standards up, but we're not going to give all of our wealth away. And yet that's exactly what's going now, and the average individual doesn't understand that when we send these and we encourage these factories to leave, they're never coming back again.
You know, Dr. Stan, this month I celebrate my 25th year in this business. And when I first got started back in late 78, that's when I just learned and read about the Trilateral Commission and the big New Brzezinski and all the crowd there with the Carter administration. And when I was first getting in the business, I volunteered to speak to every civic group that would listen to me. And I promised myself at that time I would never speak to any group without bringing up the Trilateral Commission and talking about what their plans were. And I always used one quote, which I used it so many times I can still remember it 20 years later. And this was the big New Brzezinski and Richard Gardner. And I'll paraphrase it, but what they basically said is, what we must do is take an end run around national sovereignty, eroding it piece by piece, to raise the standard of living of the undeveloped countries of the world while we lower the standard of living of America so we can more comfortably merge them into a new one world order. You know, that was 30 years ago, 25 years ago at least. And, you know, if someone would have taken that quote and put it above their TV set, and for the last 20, 25 years, every time they watch the news, look at that quote and see where that fit into the puzzle, you would see that most of what's happened to us has been orchestrated.
Now, where did that quote come from again?
That was Zbigniew Brzezinski and Richard Gardner. They all had basically the...
Well, now, I remember Richard Gardner, that is April 1974, where he talks about doing an end run around our national sovereignty, around our Constitution, using GATT and the World Trade Organization and these others to bring us into this new world order.
That's exactly what they said they were going to do, and that's exactly what they've been doing.
Sure. Well, of course, for our listeners out there, you know, our country's in real trouble economically now. You look at the market, gee, it was up today, and, things have got to be good because the market's doing so well. But the trouble is that the production is not up in most instances. The only thing that's really up is massive defense spending, and it's up like 700%. And of course, the building boom is still going because, of course, of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae and them pumping all this make-believe money into the building market. But what about the rest of the economy?
Well, the problem we face is that, we ended the 20-year bubble back in March of 2000, and the markets had a massive correction, destroyed an awful lot of paper wealth. And before you can start a new bull market, so to speak, you have to cleanse the debt structure from the old move, and we never did that. The The P.E. ratios of the stocks never got down to anywhere near they need to be before you can cleanse the system and get rid of all the excess capacity. So we're starting into this quote-unquote new recovery with way overextended markets in every criteria. So it's a very vulnerable or fragile system, and it's going to be very difficult to keep this thing going.
All right, fine. Well, of course, what's happening now, of course, in the last few weeks, why certainly silver has been moving, gold has been moving, platinum has been moving. What's really bringing this about? Is that because people are becoming aware of what's going on, or does this simply reflect the fact that the dollar has lost so much of its value in comparison with the euro? And then, of course, recently they've been telling us the dollar is going back up again. What's really going on?
Well, you know, over the last 20 years, as the whole world scrambled to trade with the United States, they were literally orchestrating their currency lower versus the dollar, making the dollar artificially strong, which gave us a feeling of, invincible. And so as that bubble ran for 20 years, and the foreigners have accumulated over that period literally trillions of dollars of U.S. debt instruments, and when that bubble finally broke and the dollar started down, and down, what, 25% now against the euro? It was 30% at one point. The foreigners holding our dollars are not very happy, so they're dumping their dollar instruments, which means they're selling their treasury bills, their treasury bonds, et cetera, which is overloading the market with these bonds that are being sold. And the Fed has to come in and refinance or buy those bonds back to keep them from going unwanted in the market. So that's what you're seeing, is the whole world trying to abandon the dollar, except they have to do it very gingerly because they still have 70 to 80% of their reserves invested in dollars. So the last thing they want to do is collapse the dollar overnight.
But you think it's going to be a gradual process of just replacing the dollar with a euro or some other currency?
I think the euro will be part of it. I think the Asian countries will go to either the yuan or the dinar, or of course, they're all going into gold. I think one of the biggest events of the last year or so is China. And the fact that for the first time since communism took over, the Chinese government is now allowing for the first time Chinese citizens to buy physical gold and physical silver. And they opened up something called the Shanghai Exchange back in either June or July. But so far, I mean, the daily volume from the reports I'm getting is, for example, on silver, they've been averaging over 1 million ounces of silver per day, according to the Chinese citizens. So that silver that China was dumping into the market for the last 2 years, supposedly, to take up the slack between our deficits, is now going to be going to the Chinese people and not coming into the open market.
So basically, what you're anticipating then is a shortage of silver somewhere down the line.
Absolutely. We've got a shortage coming anyway. We've been going 15 years now, consuming 100 million ounces more silver than the world produces. Now you throw that on top of an already impossible situation, and it's just a question of time.
All right, so but do we really know how much silver there is out there to be trading at the present time? Does anybody really know how much silver there is that's overhanging the market?
Well, 30, 40 years ago, there was 6 to 10 billion ounces. All we can really identify today is 105 million ounces or so on the COMEX. But we also know of that 105 million ounces, only 36 million ounces of it is available to the market. The rest of it is just silver that maybe someone storing there. They have no designs or desire to sell it anytime soon. So while it shows up on the inventory, it's not necessarily available to the market.
Well, what about Warren Buffett, though? Doesn't he have 100 million or more ounces of silver stashed over in Great Britain?
I don't think he does. He bought the silver. He bought it in the futures market, then started taking delivery. And then in February of 1998, when he finally came public, said he was the one that was accumulating silver. Silver ran to about almost $8 that day. And then he made that announcement and basically said he had bought 130 million ounces. He had taken delivery on the COMEX of 87 million ounces. He had that silver shipped to London, as you say. And then that's about all you heard from it officially. the silver backed off, and the rumors were out and that he had leased that silver back into the market. So if he leased it into the market, then he's not holding it physically. He may be holding a paper position that someone owes him silver, but the people he leased it to, no doubt, sold that silver into the market to use the proceeds for their brilliant trading strategies in the market. So I think that silver that he purchased went back to the market.
Well, I think that the thing that people have to realize is that they've been artificially holding the price of gold and silver and down for many years. Now, the reason that they've done that is if they can manipulate the price of gold and silver and they don't run up, people aren't going to want to buy them. If they control, they do control the majority of the gold in the world, and I suspect the majority of the silver in the world, if they control the majority of gold and silver, then what do we use for our exchange? Well, we have to use their paper. So the central banks, of course, don't want the people to use gold. They don't want to use something of value. They want to use something that is worthless. But, of course, as long as it's perceived as being of value, why, people, of course, will use it as a medium of exchange. People have always had every society to have a medium of exchange, and certainly paper is much more easily transferred than gold. It used to be there would be gold receipts. There would be receipts for gold. There would be something behind them. Now, of course, there's simply faith in the central banks. But, of course, we've seen in country after country, would be Argentina 2 years ago, Russia 4 years ago, what the chaos that can happen when people put their faith in paper money. But then that's been the history of it down through the ages, whether it be John Law's money or the money they had at the time of the French Revolution or the time of the Germany in the 30s. It's like deja vu all over again, isn't it, Ron?
That's right. There's never been a paper fiat currency in the history of the world that didn't ultimately fail, because politicians are human and they want to promise the people something for nothing so they can stay in power. And when you do that, then you always abuse the printing press and eventually you destroy the credibility of it, which is what has happened over the last 10, 15 years.
Well, what is happening to gold the last few days? Is it still going up, or is it sitting there? What about?
Well, what's very interesting, you know, is gold is right at a major technical breakout point at 380.
At 380?
Well, that's the breakout point.
I see.
And it it keeps creeping up on it, and it hit 377 or so, 378 last week, and then this morning they tried to get it down again. Let me see. Gold closed today. it closed down $2.50 at $376.20.
All right, fine.
So, you know, the gold is right on the verge of a major breakout. They've been shorting the gold, just adding to their short position in a desperate attempt to hold it down, and it just won't go down. Silver's the same way, and platinum is also above 700. So all the metals are at a major, major critical breakout point, and if the establishment or the bankers can't get it down from here, I think we're about on the verge of exploding to the upside.
Well, now, what was silver? What did silver close at?
Silver closed down 4 cents today at 509. So still, it's holding steadily above five. You know, if you think about it, 6 months ago or so, the powers to be could step into the silver market or the gold market, but the silver market in particular, and squash it 50 cents without even trying. Today they've been trying now for 3, 4, 5 weeks to get it back below five, and it just won't go. So I think the balance of power in these markets is shifting very quickly to the hard money side.
But, of course, does some of this represent the fact that the dollar is down, and since this is an international commodity, why, that would raise the price. In other words, if the dollar goes down and this stays at the same value, then it would be certainly valued more in dollars.
Certainly, that's part of it. But I was reading something last night where gold is actually going up in terms of all currencies now. So that tells you there is a major move out of paper money. You know, we focus on the dollar and how weak it is, but the reality is that all the paper currencies are very weak. All the economies of the world are in trouble. And so the whole world is slowly, gradually, or accelerating, going into to gold and silver as a refuge and a hedge.
No, right. Well, you know, of course, what's really so interesting is that the economy of India really is doing pretty well because we're bringing Indians here under special visas because the employers say, gee, we can't hire anybody here to do the work. Of course, they can hire people here. They just don't want to pay them. So they bring them in here for, you know, $12,000 a year for, and somebody who's making $80,000 gets laid off. And then, of course, a lot of our jobs are being exported over there, support jobs. Dell Computer hires people over in Pakistan. You call your friendly computer manufacturer for support, and you'll be talking to a fellow named Joe. The only trouble is he lives in Pakistan or India or someplace like that. So increasingly, our support jobs, our white-collar jobs, are moving overseas. The average American really cannot see yet exactly what they're doing and how they are actively working. The leaders of both political parties are to impoverish America. And then, of course, this massive spending, and, of course, this $80-some billion we're going to be putting out for Iraq is going to build up the infrastructure of Iraq, but we don't have any money to build up the infrastructure of the United States. Our roads are in real trouble. Our grid, our electric grid's in trouble. And nobody ever asks, what's wrong with this picture? They have 47,000 Iraqi troops we have hired to guard the borders of Iraq. We can't have any troops on our own border to protect us from a possible terrorist incursion from Mexico. Of course, I don't think the terrorists are going to come in from Mexico. I think we know who all the terrorists are, but we tell the American people that. Why, of course, they would immediately say, well, gee, maybe we don't need this war on terrorism. Maybe we really didn't have to go over there to Iraq. Maybe this is simply a different agenda. But, of course, we couldn't let the American people know that. Well, if you agree or disagree, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. What do you think people ought to be doing, Ron?
Well, they need to understand and recognize that the paper markets, the traditional investments that everyone have always depended on, whether it's stocks or T-bills or CDs or treasury bonds or even real estate, because, you know, real estate is more of a mortgage market than it is a pure commodity. All of those markets are under attack. And the refuge that's going to protect people in the future is the precious metals.
Well, but again, the real estate market's really doing pretty well right now.
Well, as long as they can keep the interest rates going lower and lower and lower, and as you know, the bond market collapsed 15% in the six-week period here, one of the fastest bond market drops in history, which by definition means interest rates are starting back up, and so the question is how long can they keep the real estate refi bubble going with interest rates threatening to go much higher.
But of course, the Fed hasn't raised the interest rates yet. Why did the interest rates go up in the bond market rather than, because of course, at least as far as what we get from the Fed, why they're still apparently keeping the interest rates down?
Well, probably the proper question is the United States becoming more of a banana republic because of our massive debt structure? And are we losing the credibility that people used to have in our bonds where they would invest for a low interest rate? Now that they see the inflation and the devaluation of the currency and the flight out of the dollar occurring all over the world, then people are not going to loan their money out at 3, 4, 5% when they perceive the dollar is losing value at 10, 15, 20%. And that's what's happening. So you're seeing people stay away or shy away or get rid of their treasury bonds, which in turn forces interest rates higher. And of course, when interest rates go higher, then that's like an ice pick coming down on this real estate refi bubble, because that market depends on ever lower interest rates, not just low interest rates. You have to keep them going lower so that people can go back to the well every 2, 3, 4 years and refinance their house and take that equity up and keep the spending going.
Well, of course, eventually you've got more taken out of the house than the actual value of the house itself. At that point, it doesn't pay you to keep the house at all. You might as well walk away from it.
That's right. And, they're heading between a rock and a hard place. I don't know how to keep this thing going because you're dependent on consumer spending from a consumer populace that is in debt beyond any hope, but that's what they're hoping to keep this economy going and to keep it going. How do you get a new binge or new bull market going when people are already tapped out?
Well, the thing is, right now, they're just, my understanding that spending for defense is up about 700%. And they're just buying all sorts of things and pouring money into Silicon Valley for this, that, or the other thing. So the defense market is doing well. The housing market is doing well. But what about the other productions here? I understand a lot of our agriculture is having real problems because they're bringing in cheap agriculture from other countries, and they can do it so readily now with refrigeration and, of course, big 747s. And and so we get our grapes from South America and our apples from other countries, although, you know, we're a major apple producer. But all of the, little bit by little bit, why they're even eroding our agricultural base, aren't they?
Absolutely. That's been going on for, 30, 40, 50 years. The, first they started off by paying the farmers not to farm, and they got them all in debt beyond, where they lost their farm. So, yeah, we just don't have the same country today as we had back in going into the Depression of the 30s, where most people lived off the land. I don't know how anyone thinks we're going to get a new bull market going when unemployment rates keep going up. They're laying off everyone. All the corporations are cutting back to try to make their earnings look better. But, that's not an economic boom. They're just trying to salvage what they can out of the sales they have. So it's not a very pretty picture out there, any way you look at it.
Well, they keep telling us now that the market's turned, that, things are a lot better than they were.
Well, let's face it, this whole monetary system is a confidence game. What would we expect them to tell us? That things are getting worse, so just go pull in the horns and let the whole thing collapse? No, they're going to tell us everything's going great. Go out and keep building, keep buying. And I think what they had no choice, but Richard Russell says it best, whenever the economy gets in trouble and it threatens to go into a deflation, with this massive debt structure, if you ever let it get out of control to the downside, then we go into a black hole banking collapse like we had in 1929. They certainly don't want to allow that to happen. So I think they will always err on the side of inflation. But Richard Russell says it best when he says, it's inflate or die.
Well, what was his remark that he thought that actually the price of gold would cross over the stock market one of these days?
Well, he predicted that first back in the mid-70s, and I don't remember exactly what the prices were then, but I think the gold was probably somewhere between $100 and $200 an ounce, and the Dow Jones was approaching 1,000, and he came out with the bold prediction that gold would surpass the Dow, and of course everyone thought he was going off the edge. But in 1980, of course, that's exactly what happened. Gold hit 870, and the Dow was trading at 780. Well, here we are, 23 years later, and Richard Russell's saying the same thing again. He's saying gold will surpass the Dow again. They will cross paths somewhere around 3,000. Now, if you think about it, that's frightening right off the bat. If the Dow were to go down to 3,000, and you already have the pension plans underwater as far as, they don't have they're unfunded. How unfunded would they be if the Dow were to drop that far? And what would happen to the tax base? And, the economy would be in a shambles. That whole debt structure would certainly come tumbling down. So what it does illustrate, though, if you think about it, if gold were to go from this $370 to $3,000, as he predicts, and the Dow from 9,000 or 9,500 today down to 3,000, the stark contrast of being right versus wrong in these markets will be a disaster. You see what I'm trying to say? If you've got your money in the wrong place and the market goes down as much as he's saying, then people are going to get wiped out where they could have easily protected themselves by putting that same money into gold, which went up almost 1,000%.
Right. Well, of course, the trouble is that people always do the things at the wrong time, and that's one reason we put the programs on. Just I suggest that people at least evaluate what's going on now. Do not believe what you read in the newspapers, and we're eventually, of course, I think we're going to see these things come to pass. And we've had Ron on higher a number of times in the past, and we've talked about many of these same issues. And those people who had moved before, I think have, I think they're a lot further away than a lot further ahead than the people have been in the market itself. We're going to be taking off here for just a minute, and we'll be right back with Ron. We'll invite your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and let me just see who we have calling in. Who's calling in here?
This is Josh in Santa Cruz.
Hi, do you have a question or comment?
I have a quick comment, kind of going back to the last program. One of the people speaking mentioned that the Santa Cruz Community Credit Union was going to be hosting Jim Hightower for a presentation, and that's Saturday, 5:30 to 7 p.m., and they do request that you SVP because there's limited seating. That number is 761-8507. And his new book, Jim Hightower's new book, is Thieves in High Places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back.
All right. Well, it sounds like it should be an interesting talk.
Yeah, and then the other thing, you guys have kind of been alluding to this, and the last program as well, is if we weren't spending this $70 to $80 billion on the war in Iraq, what else could we be doing with that money? And there's a great website, The Cost of War. com. It's a little ticker. You can watch the amount of money spinning by as we spend it in Iraq, and then you can click on all the different social programs and what that would translate into if we were spending it in other social programs.
Well, I think maybe we ought to just give it back to the people and quit spending it on social programs.
Well, then that was my question, is if we, since you guys are talking about the value of the gold and the silver and how that's all turning around right now, if we were spending that money that we're spending in Iraq on other things in our economy, would that make a difference in what's happening to our economy, or would we still just be overspending and would it not do a darn bit of good? And I'll take the answer off the air.
All right, thanks very much. What would your response be to that?
Well, yeah, the private sector people can spend money more efficiently than the government, so whenever the government spends, it has to tax the people. Usually they use it for welfare programs. So bottom line, what you're doing is taxing the producer and subsidizing the welfare. You're always going to get more of what you tax, or less of what you tax and more of what you subsidize. So, you know, we need to be cutting way back on the spending and bring it back to a free market.
Well, this idea that look at all the good we could do with it if we gave the government the money, the reality is you're never going to do good by giving government money. They're always going to waste it. That's the very nature of government. And so, you know, the best thing to do is to cut the taxes, and let, of course, that really stimulates the economy. But you can't cut the taxes if you don't cut the government spending. That's what you have to do. And so people seem to have this idea that, gee, if we just spent that money on something else, no. Get the government off our backs and out of our pocketbooks. The only way you can be free is to limit the power of government, because liberty and limited government are synonymous, and tyranny and total government are synonymous.
That's right. Government will always use the money to further their goals. And I always remember I went to Washington, D.C. back in 1981 and heard a bunch of the congressmen, but Ron Paul, I remember in his speech, he said, if we would just take all the money that the federal government collects in taxes and go out and burn it, we'd be doing the American people a tremendous favor, because what they do is take our tax money and then use it to harass us. And that's a pretty true statement. So, yeah, you know, if you had people in office that really wanted to straighten out America, then the simple solution would be to start putting a tariff on imports That's how our government survived for the first 100 years. We never had an income tax for over 100 years.
Well, almost 100, and actually it was from 1789 until 1913. So you're talking really about 130 years.
Right, and abandon this bogus concept of free trade, where you really are. It's an orchestrated way to undermine the strength of America, because we could never compete with slave labor. And so you have to put a tariff on it, but that's why all of our plants have no choice if they want to survive, unfortunately, that they're going overseas.
Well, you know, I think it's the most amazing thing, Ron, that the you know, it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough and enough newspapers say it and enough television pundits say it, people will believe. Do you remember when they were telling us why NAFTA was going to be good?
Right.
Because we were going to sell all those items to Mexico and all those items to Canada. Now, at that time, before NAFTA, we had a positive balance of trade with both of those countries. NAFTA gave us a negative balance of trade with both of those countries. And, you know, and then, but, you know, not to be outdone, they said, oh, but now we really want to open up the markets in China. There's 1,250,000,000 Chinese there. Every one of them is going to want to buy our cars, and everyone is going to buy our products, you know. Or the inference is this, you know. And playing on the greed of people, they sell them the idea. They do not understand. The real motivation is to transfer the wealth of America to all these other countries so we can have equality and then we can merge into this one world system. That's what it's really all about. But if you told the American people, they'd vote the scoundrels out of office. And I have to say that the only presidential candidate who is actually even talking about this issue is Kasteljic. I think maybe Gephardt is as well, but I mean, the rest of them are just going right along with the globalization. All the Democrats are.
That's right.
And I wish we'd have somebody stand up and, you know, and just say, we're not going that way. Incidentally, it's very obvious that the man that the establishment has picked, it just happens to be General Clark. And, of course, General Clark is a Rhodes Scholar, member of the Council on Foreign Relations. And he is the one who's going to step in here one of these days and save the Democrats.
Well, you know, what's really criminal about this whole thing is that you take NAFTA and then GATA and all these massive bills. If I recall, GATA was NAFTA was something like 2,500 pages, and they had one or two days. They put it on the fast track. You can't even debate it. So how could one congressman, especially with GATA, what was that, 27,000 pages?
Oh, I don't know. I know the world.
I mean, it was just massively big.
28,000 pages.
Right, and they passed it with two or three days debate or whatever, you know, a week. Heck, it would take any congressman 6 months just to read it. And so for them to, any of them, to vote for a bill that they have not read, in my opinion, is the epitome of treason, because they took a vote to uphold and defend the Constitution. How could you possibly do that if you don't even know what you're voting on?
Well, of course, the thing is, that's the way this thing is run. You have to understand the reality is, Ron, that the Congress is there simply to be a rubber stamp for the establishment that controls both political parties.
Absolutely.
And when you understand that, then it all makes sense. If you're looking at it logically, you know, they keep the congressmen going. You know, they start them early in the morning, and they go to these committee meetings ad nauseum, and they're on two or three committees, and they can't attend them all, and then they vote in the afternoon, and they'll have so many bills, you know, no way in the world that they could read all of those bills.
Right.
So, you know, it is really a scam, and the great tragedy is, you know, we have some good congressmen back there. But what we ought to do is have Congress meet for perhaps the 3 months out of the year and limit every congressman to introducing one bill.
Right. Well, it's out of control, and it's hard to imagine what's going to happen to get it straightened out at this point.
All right, fine. Well, if you were out in the listening audience listening to this program right now and we hear all the doom and gloom, what would your advice to the listener be?
Well, I honestly believe that right now, at this moment in history, silver is probably the best investment opportunity that any of the people out there have ever had in their lifetime. The world has literally consumed 4,000 years of silver. It took 4,000 years to accumulate over the last 40 years, and the world is now out of the most critical metal in the world today. Silver goes into every new technology that comes down the pike. So. Plus, people, when they lose confidence in paper money, always seek the refuge of silver. back in the 70s, silver went from $1.29 to $52 an ounce. Here we have a chance to buy silver at $5. If you take into account inflation over the last 30 years, silver is probably the cheapest it's ever been in history. And yet the world is out of it, and the world desperately needs it. And so I think silver is a no-brainer to go much, much higher. And so it's an easy way for people to protect themselves from all the dangers out there in the paper market. So.
All right. Well, how would they actually, how would they acquire? Would they acquire bars, or would they acquire the silver rounds, or would they acquire the uncirculated coins, or would they get junk coins? What should people do if they really are interested in doing something?
My priorities would be this. The first, I would start off with what we call the junk bags. Those are the pre-1965 U.S. coinage, the silver coinage. Those are the dimes, quarters, and halves. You buy it by the bag. A bag is $1,000 face value of the coin. So if you had a bag of dimes, for example, you would have to have 10,000 dimes to make up $1,000 on the face of the coins. That translates to 720 ounces of pure silver, if you were to melt it down, refine it into ingots. So we have probably melted down over the last 40 years somewhere between 90 and 95% of all those coins ever minted. So whenever the people come into the silver market to get ready for a monetary crisis, for example, like 1999 when people were buying silver for Y2K, these bags went to a 50% premium very, very quickly. So once the surge of buying comes into the market, the bags will dry up very, very quickly. And I've seen it happen several times. So that's where I would start.
What is a bag of silver, you know, junk silver cost?
Okay, you're buying about 720 ounces of silver. So today a bag would buy, cost somewhere around $3,750 to $33,800. So you're paying about $5.20 an ounce, which is close to where silver is.
All right, fine. Well, you have actually written some sort of a letter or report on silver, haven't you? Want to put your number out so people would know if they want to get that report?
Sure, that's 1-800-595-0561.
Give that one more time.
It's 1-800-595-0561. The report's called The Unbelievably Bullish Case for Silver. I really think it is the refuge that people should be seeking now to protect themselves from the dangers in all the other markets.
Well, what about getting out of debt?
Absolutely, if you can. But if all your savings wouldn't even get you close to out of debt, then one would probably be wiser to put that money into silver if it does what I think it's going to do. And people like Richard Russell have predicted silver could go as high as $200 an ounce over the next 2 or 3, 4 years. So, but even if it just went to $15 or $20, that would triple or quadruple your money. Then once you had that nest egg has increased, then you could take part of that and pay off your debts. But yeah, I agree. Getting out of debt should be everyone's first priority.
All right, fine. So we get out of debt, and then, of course, we, or if we possibly can, and then, of course, what about such? What about gold coins? Are they something that would be worthwhile having or not at this time?
Oh, sure. Everyone wants a few gold coins. I would just put the preference in the silver. I would be personally 75% silver and maybe 25% gold. In the gold coins, I would stick with the bullion-type coins. I would tend to want to buy the little fractional size coins, not the 1 ounce coins, but buy, for example, the 1/10 ounce gold Krugerrand or the maple eighth, because when gold goes higher, a 1 ounce coin is going to be really, real valuable and real expensive. So the little 10th ounces tend to take on extra value when the surge comes into the market. So just like the bags, which go to a premium, so do the little 1/10 ounce coins. You can buy them pretty cheap now, so it gives you more versatility later and sell them off.
All right. Well, of course, you know, my concern is that right now everything is really centering around defense spending. And this is the big thing that's keeping the market going and massive amounts of money being put out to buy various types of weapons programs. And, you know, welfare for Boeing. We see that Boeing got the contract and it was going to cost, $3 or $4 billion more to lease the planes than if they just bought the planes outright. And so we see the government coming up with welfare for the corporations, just to keep them going, because, of course, Boeing's a very important corporation. But I don't think it's up to the taxpayers to subsidize the major corporations and the stockholders. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, again, the government is in such horrible straits that the whole system is so bloated it's unsustainable, this massive debt structure, but they have no choice but to do their best, so they have to print. And they'll find any way they can to do that. And, we can debate whether they should or shouldn't do it. The fact is they have no choice but to do it, or otherwise the system collapses of its own weight. So.
Well, you know, of course, if you've been, I'm sure you're well aware of what the figures are. They've been talking in the neighborhood of a federal deficit this year of $450,000, or $450 billion, I should say. Next year, it's supposed to be $480 billion. Where does this $87 billion fit into that? Is that already budgeted in, or is that going to be on top of what we already have?
Well, see, I'm hearing figures of $600 billion. So I think, you know, when you take into account also the trade deficit, we're already over $1 trillion a year. And, just 20, 30 years ago, I remember in 1980 when we had gold explode to 870 with the blow-off years of Jimmy Carter. At the end of that whole blow-off, the total national debt was still only $750 billion or something. Maybe less than $1 trillion. And now, you know, it took us, 220 years to reach that point. And now we're doing it probably in a year.
Right, well.
So obviously it's out of control.
Well, let's go to Herman calling from Carmel. Hi, Herman. How are you doing?
Very well. Thank you for having the guest on. I have a question. There was a headline article 2 days ago in the Chronicle talking about lumber prices are skyrocketing because of the amount that's being shipped off to build things in Iraq and also the continued home boom. But, I mean, some prices have gone up like 30, 40, 50%. Do you have any comment on that?
Well, as they run the printing press to keep this system from collapsing, I've said on previous shows, I think they're going to take us towards hyperinflation because at least with inflation you can put out the spin machine that things are getting better, that values are going up, and in real terms they may be collapsing. But in nominal terms, if the stock market goes up 10, 15% in a year, people would tend to think they're doing okay. So I think it's just a function of the government is going to inflate. That is the only choice they have, and as a result, all prices and costs are going to go up.
Would that explain why real estate prices have not dropped in many areas?
Well, see, the real estate is a function of, one, making abnormally low mortgage rates available by Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, the government's is going to be pumping money. That's one way they can create more money than anything, is through the real estate market. That's what's driving the real estate market. Plus, a lot of people that got wiped out or clobbered in the stock market are saying, oh, well, look, the real estate market's still going, so I'm going to take my money out of stock and go get me another house or buy a bigger house. And so they're really jumping from the frying pan to the fire. Because when you have your money in the stock market, at least you're losing a dollar for a dollar. But when you take that money that's left over and put it as a down payment on a mortgage on a house, now you've leveraged yourself maybe 10-1. So now if the real estate market bubble ever pops, you're going to be losing $10 for every $1 down. You see what I'm saying? In other words,
good
your leverage
point.
Is eat you alive on the downside. So the real estate market.
But if somebody's in a home or maybe a second property and they say, okay, I'll bail out of my property and while I still can, and then they're sitting with cash and then the dollar tanks, they've lost as well.
You're right. So that's why you have to put your free dollars into something that's going to keep up with inflation, or the destruction of the dollar, and I would say that's silver and gold. They have throughout history, whenever people lose confidence in paper money, they seek the refuge of gold and silver. So in the 70s, silver went from $1.29 to $50. This time I think you're going to see silver go through $100 and even $200, which is a tremendous upside. So that would be the best refuge, in my opinion. It's the once in your lifetime where you'll have a chance to make 10, 20, 30, 40, even 50 times on your money with basically zero risk.
Mm-hmm.
Silver can't go lower from here. So in these trying times where everything else is vulnerable, I would say put your money in the safe haven.
Now, for those listeners that may be elderly or looking to be supported by their retirement funds, I mean, this is a pretty scary scenario. I mean, here are people that have retirement funds built up in various places, and with what you're suggesting, inflation may wipe that out. How do you see Americans supporting themselves in the next 10 or 20 years?
Well, that I think you hit it right on the nose. I'm working with a little lady here in town that has like $400,000 in an annuity. 2-3 years ago, she was making 8-10%, which is, $30,000-$35,000 a year. If your house is paid for, a person could live fairly comfortable on that. They probably wouldn't be taking a trip to Europe every year, but they could live comfortable. Today, that same money is earning $10,000-$12,000. Now, very few people can live on that in today's world, so that's what's happening. And as people lose the ability to earn a living off of their savings, then they have to seek a refuge, something that will keep up with it. And, of course, a lot of them are desperately going into the stock market and so forth, which, again, is very, very risky. But a percentage of that is people lose faith in the instruments of the day, the traditional instruments, are going to seek the safe haven of gold and silver.
And I think, Herman, what we're really going to see is the impoverishment of the American people. And these people who have been in the system a long time think they really understand it and how it's played. When you come to that crisis situation, they do not act, and they lose everything. This is what happened to the people in Germany. One of my very good friends' grandmother had 1 million marks, and she was a wealthy woman in Germany, and she kept in the mattress. And then the inflation came on, and eventually she couldn't buy a loaf of bread with 1 million marks. So you have to know the future. We have a wonderful book. It's called Fiat Money, Inflation in France. Fiat Money, Inflation in France. It was written by Andrew Dickinson White, who was the dean of Cornell University 100 years ago. And he was writing about something that had happened over 200 years ago. And that was what happened after the French Revolution to the monetary system. It's a classic book. We offer that along with Bastiat's The Law. And if you're interested in getting them, or any of our listeners, really want to understand inflation, this is the classic book.
Those were the two first books I read when I got interested in this this arena, so I would highly recommend those two books.
Do you see any areas of the country that will be more stable than others, for example, rural areas or farming communities?
Yeah, I would think they would be more stable because the prices haven't been run up quite as much, although some of the areas back in the Y2K days, some of the rural land just went ridiculously high. You know, land that was going for $1,000 was suddenly going for $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 an acre.
Ron, what happened after Y2K? Did a lot of the people who bought silver sell it back into their market, or did they hang on to it?
I've spent the first 2-3 years after Y2K desperately trying to talk people out of selling their silver. And I was able to talk most of them out of it, but you had a lot of people that once Y2K was over, they said, let me sell my silver. I want to get back into the market. And so those silver bags that we were talking about, just to give you one example, the dealers I work with told me that for a solid year after Y2K came in, year 2000, that every bag they purchased was going right back to a refinery where it was melted down and put into silver ingots to sell into the industry. So over the last 2 years, a short supply of bags was made much shorter because there were literally thousands upon thousands of those bags melted down. So yeah, a lot of people did sell.
Okay, anything else there, Herman?
No, that's it, and just to encourage our listeners to keep the upward look, because in spite of everything, you know, all of our earthly treasures together will not save us. So
you're absolutely right.
Put some of your money in the Bank of Heaven, and don't forget to tithe, because someday when it's all gone, at least you will have benefited others.
And of course, what's that old saying? You never saw a hearse on the way to the graveyard with a U-Haul truck behind it, a U-Haul trailer. Thanks so
much.
Absolutely.
God bless you both, and get well, Dr. Stan.
I will. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, that was Herman calling from Carmel. And if you're out there in the listening audience, number 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we're really talking about what's happening with the economy. What people do not understand is we have the greatest federal debts, the greatest federal deficits in all history. We are the greatest debtor nation in the world. They constantly lie to the American people when they give us, the idea that there is a trust fund for Social Security and a trust fund for Medicare. There is none. And you remember Al Gore talking, he wanted to put this money into a locked box. Well, what he was basically saying was, we're going to take it away so government can't spend it. Government's been spending it since the days of Lyndon Johnson. They have stolen everything out of that account because they figured that they'll be retired and on their fat government pensions before the day of reckoning comes. But the day of reckoning is coming. And, by 2020, 2030, why the baby boomers are going to begin retiring and there's no money there. Absolutely no money. So you better start making your preparations for yourself. Do not trust the government because people who trust government eventually end up losing everything. What are your thoughts, Ron? We got about 2 or 3 minutes more before we turn into a pumpkin.
Well, I would just say that people have to just recognize that the government officials and the bankers have no choice but to try to convince people that everything's going to be okay. The whole system is really nothing more than a confidence game. And so what could we expect them to do? They've got to try to convince everyone that everything is okay. And so it becomes the responsibility of every individual to do their own, become accountable to themselves, to educate themselves. Otherwise, they're going to be led right down the primrose path, and their life savings will be destroyed.
I really believe that's absolutely true, which is why I have Ron on from time to time just to talk about these things. Evaluate what he's saying. We have a wonderful book called The Creature from Jekyll Island, another book called The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton. We'll give you a solid foundation in how the whole monetary system works. You really don't understand what's going on. You're not supposed to. The Federal Reserve is a privately owned central bank. That is run not for the benefit of the American people, but for the benefit of the central bankers who work together in concert in secret meetings, and they control the governments of the world. So said Professor Quigley, and that's exactly what it's all about. They control them out of the Bank for International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, and of course the building is shaped like a boot, that phrase from George Orwell's 1984, when O'Brien was discussing what socialism was, a boot stamping on a human face forever. Well, we're just about out of time, Ron. I want to thank you so very, very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure having you here at Radio Liberty.
Always good to be with you, Dr. Stan.
And what's that telephone number one more time if people want your report?
That's 1-800-595-0561.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Good to be with you.
All right, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just have to comment that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and, of course, we're dependent on you to help us so that we can not only stay on these stations but gradually expand our coverage across America. We have about 59 different outlets every week. An expensive proposition, but God has provided so far, and we hope he'll continue providing. Now, if you'd like to consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, or if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927 or 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. So give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. And then if you'd like a free copy of the newsletter, we'll be glad to get that off. Please tell others about these programs. Now, behind a back of all that our enemies have plotted, back of all that saints, well, I'm trying to give you a little poem there. I can't quite remember it right now. I've been a little ill recently. But the whole basic theme is that there is a spiritual battle that's taking place, and most people don't understand it. Back of all that foes have plotted, back of all that saints have planned, back of the schemes of men and demons is a higher hidden hand. God's there. God bless you. Good night. And picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, and supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But hold your calls for the time being. We have with us Arthur Burncloud, and we're going to be talking about the Veterans Administration. Arthur, it's so good to have you with us. And I want to comment that this is a different station, different audience. Don't hesitate at all to repeat what you said earlier.
Ah, okay. That's a beautiful opening statement, Dr. Stan. And I'm in awe of that. That's a beautiful opening statement.
Well, thank you so very much.
We're going to talk. My name is Arthur Burncloud, and I'm executive director of Veterans for Constitutional Law, and I'm a disabled veteran myself. And we're going to talk tonight about the Veterans Administration. It's a renegade agency that's outside the laws of this land. And as we're drawing near to the end of the year, I'm going to address this message this evening to the people of the United States who are listening in, because knowledge is power. And the more knowledge you have, the more you can do something about a situation that needs remedying. Ignorance is no excuse, and most people are kept ignorant because this business about the Veterans Administration is the best kept secret in the country. But more and more people are finding out what's really going on, and again, as we draw near the end of the year, I address this message to the people of the United States as well as to the Fourth Estate, our esteemed media. And as disabled veterans who are franchised and victimized by a predatory, dishonest, outlaw government administrative agency, the Veterans Administration, known as the VA, they're victimized by this administration. This administration's administrative agency, the VA, they're victimized by its National Veterans Service Organization and its congressional cohorts. It's not just the VA. It's the VA and all those who cooperate in breaking the law and ripping off our citizens. And we're again pleading with you to carry this message to all Americans that our protection under the Constitution of the United States has been stolen from us as veterans. The same thing is going to happen to all of you unless we draw a line in the sand and we say no more and call a halt to this outrage, which should never have been permitted to go this far. Our very last and our only hope is with the media to bring the word to the American public and to warn the mothers and fathers of any youngster of military age about the growing power of these VA empire builders and the total ambush that's waiting for their loved ones if they get injured while serving in the United States military.
All right, Arthur. Well, let's talk a little bit about, of course, what happens when a disabled American veteran with a war-related wound tries to get disability based upon his, his war injury.
Oh, he's going to find he's stonewalled. They will stonewall him. They will stall his case as many years as they possibly can in the hope that they can outlast him and he's going to die before his case comes to a conclusion.
Now, what about the Gulf War veterans? Have they actually gotten something for their Gulf War illness? We have of the 694,000 veterans.
Oh, yeah.
Over 200,000 have filed claims. What percentage of them have actually gotten their claims?
Well, the Gulf veterans fared a little better than the veterans of previous wars, but only by about a little over 1%. Previous veterans, only 4% of them actually get paid for their claims. 4% out of all those who apply. With the Gulf veterans, it's slightly over 5%. And that's not any great shakes. But our president back then, Mr. Bush, says the same thing is not going to happen to the Gulf veterans that happened to the Vietnam veterans. We're going to watch out for them. And, he watched out for them 5% worth. Now, we don't have to go too far back in history. Only 70 years to trace the origins and the infamy of these warped, outrageous, restrictive laws that were passed by Congress. And it's all gone down in history as the biggest betrayal of all times. Now, these laws were passed in 1940. And I know a lot of people listening in were not around back then. Now, they were passed as part of the Veterans Benefits Improvement Act of 1940. And these very same laws were found in the Economic Emergency Act of 1933 that FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, had passed. Now, they were found by the Supreme Court to be absolutely unconstitutional, and they were repealed, the Economic Emergency Act of 1933. And yet, only a few years later, they were brought back specifically under United States Code Title 38 for veterans only, denying them equal protection under the law. And the worst and the most restrictive law passed under United States Code Title 38 is Section 511A. 511A denies a veteran the right to take his claim into a real court in front of a real judge, or even better, a jury, and it binds him, quite possibly for life, to the VA's kangaroo court system. This in itself gives the Secretary of the VA finality in any decision, and we're not likely to change this degenerate law unless either our veteran-hostile House Veterans Affairs Committee permits a bill correcting this crime out on the floor of Congress for a general vote. Now, they haven't done so in 70 years of boondoggling every decent piece of veteran legislation that comes before it. And there's no reason to believe that they will unless the public and the media put their feet to the fire and make them do the right thing.
In other words, what you want is for a veteran to be able to get before a judge in a court of law, not a kangaroo court.
Exactly. These cases belong in federal district court, closest to the veteran's home. They don't belong in a kangaroo court. They don't belong in an administrative court. They belong in front of a real judge or a real jury.
Well, now, my understanding is that actually they give bonuses to the Veterans Administration analysts who can deny the most claims. Is that true?
Oh, my God. That is absolutely true. And there's a commentator on the radio on one of your stations, Mr. Brumbaugh, who calls this the 4% solution. It's the VA's 4% solution, and it's an outrageous figure. But actually, only 4% of these veterans who apply for their benefits are actually going to get paid. Now, the VA and the service organization puts out propaganda information saying they pay 11 to 12 to 13% of the claims out from people who apply for it. Now, we checked into this, and I spent maybe about a month and a half at the Library of Congress checking the VA's VACALS records. Now, here's what they do. Let's say a veteran has a claim and he's claiming two, three, four, five things, and the VA grants one of the things that he's claiming. They simply put this down as a complete adjudication of the claim. They count that as a total adjudication of the claim, and thereby they swell up that 4% figure to go anywhere from 11 to 13%. Now, after being stunned by these figures that I discovered in the VA's VACALS records, I called up somebody I know who is a high-up official at the Veterans Administration, and I said, hey, I know what you people are doing. What you're doing is you're taking claims. Let's say a veteran is asking for two, three, four, five things. If you give him one of the things he asked for, you count it as a complete adjudication, and that's how your 4%, which is reality, becomes 11, 12, or 13%. And you know what kind of a reply I got from this man? He answers me, this is what we call VA creative mathematics. In other words, they're pulling the wool over everybody's eyes. They're working on a smoke and mirrors system. Here it is, and then here it isn't. Now, the conspiracy becomes infinitely worse as Congress passes more laws on the United States Code Title 38 with the express purpose of delegating third-class citizenship to our disabled veterans, permitting the VA to operate with unbridled power, fully insulated from the laws of this land. And to say that the veterans have been sold out, that's to say the very least. And if you think it's bad, it's even worse. Now, a VA-friendly Congress also passed United States Code Title 38, Section 5902, which is known as the Gravy Train Statute, which gives the National Veterans Service Organizations virtually every freebie imaginable.
Now, this would be like the American Legion, Veterans of Foreign War, etc.
Perfect. I'll name you the six biggest. The American Legion, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, the Disabled American Veterans, which is the worst of all of them, AMVETS, the Military Order of the Purple Heart, the Marine Corps League. Their allegiance is not to the veterans of this country. Their allegiance is to the VA. And they passed this law, giving them every freebie imaginable, thereby encouraging them to betray their fellow veterans, whom they've been delegated by the VA to represent them in benefits claims with the VA. Now, the veterans did not ask these people to represent them. The VA pushed the veterans over to these people to represent them in their claims. Now, why did they push them over? Because they are not allowed to have an attorney from the onset of their case. They passed this quirk in the law saying the only time they could have an attorney represent them is once they get a final decision from the Board of Veterans Appeals. And that final decision takes no less than 7 years. And, listing some of the freebies that they're given, listed among the VA freebies, very generously given to these service organizations, are free rent, heating, electricity, and air conditioning in any VA building, free telephone, free postage, free stationery, free furniture and computer equipment, a staff to run the office, and a tax-exempt status. Although some of these service organizations compare very well financially with the assets of many of our larger corporations, Section 5902A the law, the gravy train statute, it says free rent only. Now, a very, very liberal interpretation of this statute, it gives them everything else. And why not? The American taxpayers and the betrayed disabled veterans are footing the bills for all this VA loot. Now, have things gone that far? It's even worse than that. Now, only VA and service organization, our VA service organizations and Congress, the three of them, the VA, the service organizations, and friendly Congress, passes another law, United States Code Title 38, Section 5904. Now, this is an integral part of this insidious conspiracy against our nation's veterans. Section 5904, as I had said before, will prohibit a veteran from retaining attorneys, even at their own cost, to represent them in VA claims. Now, the VA has got over 1,200 attorneys totally hell-bent on creatively finding new and better and more devious ways to deny claims, and this aberration of the law states that a veteran must have a final decision from the VA's infamous Board of Veterans Appeals before being permitted attorneys. This over-paternalistic process of the VAs, with all their delays and bureaucratic twaddle, takes anywhere from 7 to 30 years for a final decision. And VA attorneys would rather face a VA-friendly service organization rep than a real attorney. So the claims end up being pushed over to the inept service organization reps by United States Code Title 38, Section 5904. And that's what you call putting a legal lock on the system and rigging the game. And that game is rigged.
We've talked before. You mentioned there are about 260,000 Veterans Administration employees, almost a quarter of a million employees of the Veterans Administration.
Yes, this, Dr. Stan, this is truly a bloated bureaucracy. 261,000 people work for the Veterans Administration, yet only 4% of those claims will be adjudicated in favor of the veteran. Now, the question arises, do we need a bloated bureaucracy of 261,000 people working there to adjudicate only 4% in favor of the veterans? I think we all know the answer to that. And in the interim, the VA will play their time game, and they will hope that the veteran expires before the claim is settled, and they usually get their way, because this plan is a diabolically well-conceived ambush by our government to save money with the full approval of the real culprit in all this, OMB, the Office of Management and Budget. They're the ones who pull the strings for the VA, and the VA is OMB's fair-haired boy. They can do no wrong because they save the government money at any expense. Now, there are also a great many bonus incentive plans for VA employees and executives and attorneys to earn cash bonuses, and I might also add rating boards. We call them ratting boards. They earn cash bonuses and other perks by denying veterans' claims.
Well,
and
you know that they do that with the major disability companies, you know, and they, if you're working for a disability company, disability insurance, you know, you get ahead if you deny enough claims.
Oh, yes. By the way, I have some bad news on this, too. Many people who are VA adjudicators have left the Veterans Administration and have become Social Security judges. So a lot of them are bringing their thieving ways over to the Social Security office, because Social Security does pay more than the VA, but of course there's not as much stealing going on there. Anyway, in the interim, you know, this is a terribly diabolically well-conceived ambush. And the competition for this loot has gone so far that veterans do not stand any more than a 4% chance with these thieving VA rating boards. And should the veteran be fortunate enough to get that rare win, occasionally we do get a rare win, to collect retroactive money is another bad VA scene. These VA rating boards make up the laws as they go along. They make them and they break them. And it's no wonder they don't want veterans to have lawyers to make the VA thieves follow the letter of the law They don't want a lawyer looking over their shoulder and seeing what they're doing wrong. Even when the veteran, after many, many years, finally gets the VA rating boards to relent and wins his case, proving service connection for his injury, the board will always find some devious way to deny retroactivity. Now, this is a system that is so detestably dishonest that it's beyond bad. And yet our Congress is completely aware of what's going on and does nothing about it, taking the attitude of, let the next guy rock the boat, not me, about congressional oversight. There is none when it comes to the VA. Well, first of all,
Arthur, how much does the VA spend a year? How much money do they have? Do you have any idea?
Generally, the budget is somewhere around $60 billion, somewhere in that
percent. $60 billion. And, of course, part of that is to go to pay disability benefits?
Yes, a good part of it is supposed to be paying disability benefits. But, you know, they're always saying, oh, the government doesn't want to give the VA the money. Now, even when the government gives the VA the money, that's no guarantee that the money gets over to the veteran who needs it. In fact, between the rating boards paying each other bonuses and paying each other bonuses for the lawyers and executives and the service organizations getting all the freebies, they don't need more money. What they need is that money should be redistributed, that the veteran gets the money and not the freeloaders. And this is the problem here, and the attitude, again, is let the next guy rock the boat, not me. That's Congress. Well, let me tell you something now, Dr. Stan. The boat is now being rocked very hard. Now, there are billboards being put up all over the country showing a picture of Uncle Sam pointing at you saying, I lied to you about veterans' benefits. Thinking of a military career, think again. The government does not keep its promises to veterans.
And who is going to put those up?
They've been put up by a veterans organization out in Texas. And there's one right across from Fort Bragg in North Carolina. There was one right across from Pendleton in California. And there's about 60 of them put up all over the country. And people are starting to become privy to what's going on here. And what we're doing is, most of them are strategically located near military bases, and we have taken our case to the mothers and the fathers of America, pleading with them not to let the youngsters of military age fall into this well-conceived ambush plan of the government and the predatory VA. And I don't know if you're aware, but the death penalty, not the death penalty, but the insurance, which was previously $10,000 for the loss of life in the service, has just been reduced to $6,000. Lifetime medical care, which is promised to everyone who puts in 20 to 30 years in the service, has been discontinued as of November of last year.
Well, now, ordinarily, would that be through the Army or would that be through the VA?
No, that is through the Department of Defense. That's through the Department of Defense, and in their own way, the Department of Defense is just as bad as the VA.
All right, now, how do they justify it? I mean, you make a promise, and my understanding was you're in the military, you of course have that guarantee, you will get a pension for the rest of your life, and medical care. How do they justify it?
It's in about 200 different service manuals that you're going to get the pension for the rest of your life, and you're getting medical care. Now, they give you your pension, but they tell you if you want medical care, apply for Medicare. What they say is Congress really never passed a law saying in writing, on a law in writing, that medical care, free medical care is given out to military retirees. They say unless Congress passes a law, they are not going to give free medical care out. Now, this was a 9-4 on-bank decision from the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals in Washington. Now, previously, there was a 3-judge panel that voted to continue paying this. And when Mr. Bush was running for office, he said, a promise made is a promise kept. I will never appeal that decision. Yet his first official act in office was not only to appeal that decision to continue the medical benefits, but he went to all 3 judges and he coerced them into withdrawing their decision.
Well, that doesn't seem very fair or very straightforward, does it?
Well, Mr. Bush is not a fair man. And we go from one president who would do your cat to another president who we call Bushwhacker. So I think either way you go, whether it's a Democrat or Republican, I call it strike three. I think we need more independent candidates, and I think an independent candidate is going to end up being the salvation of this country once the voters here become mature enough to realize that if we go Democrat or we go Republican, we're asking for the same continuation of all the nonsense that's going on.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about the veterans who survived the Bataan Death March and what happened to them?
Okay, Bataan Death March. This happened in 1942 when the Philippines were captured by the Japanese. Now, they put up a fight that lasted many, many months. And the death march, many, many thousands of Americans and Filipinos who fought side by side with the Americans were killed on that Bataan death march. They were bayoneted if they faltered. They were bayoneted if they sat down to rest. They were bayoneted if they if they took extra food. And they finally took these survivors of Bataan and Corregidor, and they put 26,000 of them in the whole airless holds of boats and sent them over to Japan for slave labor. And most of them worked in industry, in the mines, for a cement company, Oneida, coal mines. The two companies who were most guilty were Mitsui and Mitsubishi, but there were many, many other Japanese companies that gained windfall profits from American slave labor that was used there in Japan during the war. Now, I'm going to recall the beginning of World War II, when we were attacked by Japan, and we had many people living here of Japanese extraction, and we weren't sure of their allegiance or their loyalty. We did intern quite a few of them for a short period of time here until their allegiance was investigated. Now, every single Japanese who lived here, who was interned even for one single day, has been indemnified by our government to the tune of $20,000, even for one day. Yet, these veterans, who were taken to Japan for 4 to 5 years of slave labor, have never been indemnified by our government nor the Japanese government. They have been forgotten. And our government is saying, well, they're not eligible for any of these. The San Francisco Treaty of 1951 says that they're not eligible. But the San Francisco Treaty does not cover individual private suits, and the San Francisco Treaty took place 9 years after these people were taken to Japan for slave labor.
Well, of course, these suits would be against the Japanese corporations that used them for slave labor.
Right.
Comparable to the suits were brought against the German corporations that used slave labor. Is that right?
Yes, and they were settled. In fact, the United States negotiated the settlement with the German government, and the Germans, for the most part, made good on quite a bit of the Americans that were held there, and Jewish laborers, the slave labor that was used from a lot of Jewish people. They were forced to make good, and they did. But the Japanese government will not even admit they did anything wrong.
But of course, it's not the Japanese government that's a big problem. It's the American Justice Department is defending the Japanese rather than trying to help the American servicemen. Isn't that right?
Exactly. We've had a bill floating around for 5 years in Congress to indemnify veterans here. This is for $20,000, which is little enough. We've had that bill floating around Congress for 5 years. And the man who fought it the hardest was Mr. Bob Stump of Arizona, who was the head of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. In fact, that bill has been boondoggled in the House Veterans Affairs Committee for 5 years. Now, the Senate claims they passed their version of it. Now, I spoke to Dianne Feinstein in California, and I said, how many of you senators would have voted in favor of the veteran if you didn't already know that that bill would be killed in committee in the House Veterans Affairs Committee? Well, they didn't have an answer for me. Now, the Senate could pass it all day long. Unless that House Veterans Affairs Committee lets that bill get out on the floor of Congress for a vote, nothing is ever going to be done. And this is an old thing with Congress. When they don't want to pass something, what they do is they boondoggle it in committee, and it never reaches the floor. And this is going on now for 70 years with bills that they don't want to pass. It's been going on for 70 full years. And I call this the biggest fraud in government that there is. And, you know, although the government, I'll tell you about the media here. The government keeps the mainline media and the larger networks towing the mark. The news is still getting out, of course. We got stations like yours. We got stations like American Freedom in Colorado and Genesis. There's quite a few people that are getting the news out. It's getting out. Of course, we don't think it's getting out fast enough, but there's still enough smaller radio and TV stations who can still think independently to get the news out. So no matter what the false statistics the VA makes up to fool people and what the Justice Department does, no matter what they do, nobody really believes them, and they can't hide the facts contained in the VA's own VACALS records. Nor can they hide the fact that since November of 1988, when Congress and the VA gave America its version of a court, it's the corrupt Court of Veterans Appeals, now called the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, only 159 veterans have prevailed out of over 17,000 claimants. And
I'll be back in just a moment here. Just hold that thought out here.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Arthur Bernclau, and he's with a veterans organization. I'm going to have him go ahead and get his telephone number out because this is a veterans organization I think is really interested in veterans. Has it not been bought out like most of them have? And as you begin looking at organizations in the United States, so many of them have been taken over from the other side. So many of the conservative Christian organizations have been infiltrated and neutralized. And Arthur's point is that the Veterans Administration, the veterans organizations have been infiltrated and neutralized. This has certainly happened with so many other organizations here in the United States, certainly the organizations that deal with POWs, and most of those have been infiltrated, and we'll just go along with the government. We won't make a fuss, because if we make a fuss, we never see our loved ones again. They've been telling them that since the Korean War, or even since the Second World War. And, you know, it's amazing. People will tend to believe it over and over again. Well, go ahead and pick up the story from there.
Dr. Stan, as you say, most of these organizations have been bought off with freebies and government favors. And we actually have had quite a few news programs. In fact, ABC 2020 featured us about 2 years ago. And Barbara Walters and Bob Brown were magnificent on that show. They had me, they picked me up by limousine, and they spent about 6 hours filming me in a studio in Midtown Manhattan, and they flew in Phil Cushman from Veterans Due Process out of Portland, Oregon, and they filmed him, and several other veterans were filmed on there testifying, and I was told there by Bob Brown, one of the hosts with Barbara Walters on the show. He says, you know, our lawyers are never, the segment we filmed of you is going to end up on the cutting room floor. Our lawyers are never going to approve that. They're too frightened of the government. But Barbara Walters was magnificent. She came right out about this veterans court, and she, right after they had the film segments of Phil Cushman and the other veterans, she came right out and ripped them royally and said out of over 17,000 claimants, only this small amount have won their case, and then she says, and only 14 of them have actually seen their money. Surely our veterans deserve something better than this fraud of a court. And she kept her word. The best part of the show was about 5 minutes of Barbara Walters letting the VA have it the way they deserved. And Frank Nebiger, the judge of this veterans court who retired about 2 years ago, he stated, the VA refuses to obey the law and claims to be above it, and when all the facts are revealed to the American public, the perpetrators of these crimes, the VA and its service organizations and congressional cohorts, they'll have no place to hide behind. And, you know, you can bet that this is going to happen because people are getting angrier and angrier about what's really going on here with this so-called court and so-called administration that was put out here to take care of veterans.
All right, well, let's just for our listeners, they have a special court that is going to hear these appeals by veterans for disability. There have been 17,000 veterans gone through.
Yes, almost 18,000.
And, of course, only 14 of them have ever seen any money.
Well, now the 20-some-odd have seen their money, but there's only been 159 cases actually won by veterans out of between 17 and 18,000 cases that were heard by this court.
All right, so 150 won their cases, and then they fight them as far as getting any money, is that it?
Then they fight them as far as getting their money. Now, over 9,000 of these cases have not even been published. So anything there can help a veteran with his case, that he can cite a case. Most of the time, he has no information to cite a case.
Well, now, can the veteran have a lawyer in this court?
Yes, a veteran at that time can have a lawyer. The lawyer is the lawyer makes 20% of whatever he collects from the veteran, and if he gets either a remand means they send it back to the Veterans Administration to go through the whole process again and again for many, many years. If he gets a remand or he gets a decision in his favor, the lawyer can also build the equal. They can build a government under the Equal Access to Justice Act, and pick himself up a few thousand dollars on the Equal Access to Justice Act. Now, you know, the military code that's come down to us from even before the age of knighthood and chivalry has found its highest expression, Dr. Stan, and the soldier, who above all men is required to perform the highest act of religious teaching, sacrifice in battle. And in the face of danger and death, he discloses those divine attributes which his Maker gave when he created man in his own image. However horrible the incidents of war may be, the soldier who is called upon to offer and give his life for his country is the noblest development of mankind. And let's not forget these words as we look back and reflect upon history to observe some of the most despicable and cowardly deeds done by our Congress and government administrative agencies like the Veterans Administration and our Justice Department for the cooperation it gives the Veterans Administration against our veterans. And, of course, the service organizations, which is the ultimate double cross. And this has been happening now ever since I can remember. I had a case myself, and I had to go into federal court to win my case. I had many, many years before the VA, and I got the same nonsense every time they used to they used to say to me, you have a 10% disability, and what I had was two fractures of the spine, three herniated discs, and a spondylolisthesis. As an orthopedic man, I think you know what a spondylolisthesis is.
Sure do.
And they discharged me originally and said you have a lower back strain. And until I went into the hospital of special surgery and I had MRIs taken to know what was really going on, they bamboozled me for years. And I finally ended up taking him into federal court and beating him. And, you know, my case is not an exception. It's rather the rule of what happens here.
Now, wait a minute. You were actually, how did you get them into a federal court then?
I got him into a federal court, not on the basis of my case. I got him into federal court on constitutional violations and due process violations. That's the only way you're going to get him into a federal court, because if you take them into a federal court on your case, they will take that. The federal court will take the case there, and they will remand it back to the Veterans Court. Your case is going to be remanded. So the only way you can do this is on constitutional violations, on due process violations, on malpractice. While I was in federal court, I filed RICO charges against the government, and they got very nervous and decided to pay me.
I see. Well, that sounds like a pretty good way to go, although, you know, that's for racketeering. You were suggesting the government is racketeering.
What would you call it, Dr. Spann?
Anyway, if you're out there listening,
when you figure this out, 159 cases out of over 17,000, I mean, I wouldn't call it any less than racketeering.
Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, for our listeners out there, you must understand that they try to develop this sense of patriotism that people are fighting for their country. I believe a man should be willing to fight for his country. Unfortunately, this war we're involved in now is not fighting for our country. This was planned long before the terrorist attack by a small group of men who want to build an American empire. The first Gulf War was a phony war. The Vietnam War was a phony war. We subsidized the North Vietnamese all during the war by giving money to the Russians who supplied the North Vietnamese. The Korean War was a phony war. All these wars, and we could get into even the Second World War and how we built up Adolf Hitler beforehand, so we would have the best enemy our money could buy. And Trading with the Enemy, the book, goes into actually how we traded in a corporation for trading with the Germans all during the war, but you're never going to read about this. So then we have these men, and they've given so much that they've survived the terrible psychological trauma that's involved, and many of them with out an arm or a leg or constant pain afterwards. And then, of course, they get into the Veterans Administration, and they're expecting they're going to be taken care of, and there is a conspiracy to withhold care. Now, I think if anybody would like to, and I get the exact quote page, if you read The Final Days by Woodward and Bernstein, they describe Henry Kissinger as saying, our military people are stupid, dumb animals to be used for foreign policy. That is the man that the president asked to head the current investigation of 9-1-1, Henry Kissinger, the same one who's quoted in Woodward and Bernstein's book. And I believe it's page about 94 to 97, somewhere there, saying our servicemen are stupid, dumb animals. Now, this is the attitude of the elitists who really control both political parties. And I think it's about time that we expose them and that we take care of the men who have fought for America.
Amen, Dr. Spann, amen. By the way, I'd like to say a few more words about the National Veterans Service Organizations and how they betray us. You know, the commentary I'm making here is it's challenging the VA's budgetary quota system of injustice employed when they adjudicate veterans' benefits and disability claims, and the sellout of these very same veterans by the National Veterans Service Organizations. Now, archaic laws passed by our Congress under United States Code Title 38 render veterans totally defenseless against a detestable symbiotic relationship between the VA and the service organization cohorts. Congress even passed a law to take care of their freeloaders, which I mentioned before, Section 5902A, the gravy train statute. And generally, I'll name them on the fingers of one hand, just six of them, six of these organizations that take advantage of veterans. And one of them is the American Legion. The other is the Disabled American Veterans, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, the Military Order of the Purple Heart, AMVETS, the Marine Corps League, and other congressionally chartered so-called veterans advocacy groups. There's 46 of them, and it's a fact. It is a fact that the VA employs unpublished sub-rosa policies, practices, and procedures, and the totality of which violates a veteran's First and Fifth Amendment rights to include due process, equal protection, and meaningful representation under the law. Furthermore, these unlawful practices are clandestinely structured to cause veterans to abandon valid claims in utter confusion, frustration, and despair, or, failing in that objective, to hold hearings and render implausible decisions which make a mockery of impartiality, due process, relevant statutes, the Code of Federal Regulations, case law, the Constitution of the United States, to include the Bill of Rights. And simply put, veterans can't get a fair and impartial hearing on their disability claims due to budgetary constraints imposed by the Office of Budget and Management, the OMB, and because they've been stripped of their constitutional right to judicial review and meaningful legal representation or any reasonable semblance thereof. And when Congress and a grateful nation enacted United States Code Title 38 to assist veterans in their return to civilian life and to compensate them for service-related injuries and disabilities, they were so certain that veterans would be treated fairly that it denied them for all intents and purposes the right to an attorney and judicial review, even where VA decisions were arbitrary and capricious. And here's where all the service organizations and all their thievery came into the picture. Congress entrusted the major national veteran service organizations, such as the DAV and the American Legion and the VFW and several others, to maintain offices in every VA installation with the fiduciary responsibility of safeguarding the veterans' interests by representing and protecting them against possible excesses by the VA. Now, inexplicably, Congress enacted legislation under U.S. See Title 38, like the gravy train statute, and they actually blackmailed these service organizations into acquiescing no matter what the circumstances, and buried them under a mountain of free services aggregating millions of dollars each for each of these organizations. And this is one of the reasons the veteran doesn't stand a chance in the kangaroo court. And among the free services given was the prestige-enhancing office space provided in every VA installation, permitting the service organizations to readily obtain additional unsuspecting members and substantial contributions. In effect, assuring that the service organizations would have continued growth under the sponsorship of the VA. Accordingly, 5902A created a fundamental, unconscionable, irreconcilable conflict of interest between the service officers of the service organizations and their clients, the veterans, which has never been disclosed to them. Under the circumstances, service organizations could not adequately represent veterans, even if they wanted to, since they were required, at the risk of their jobs, to lose gracefully by playing ball with the VA, or else their free services could be removed at the sole discretion of the Secretary of the VA. And to complete the betrayal and protect the service organization's hidden legal turf and vested private interests, our Congress therefore enacted USC Title 38, Section 5904, which precludes attorneys for veterans until after many years of VA litigation have elapsed and the veteran's claim has been butchered beyond recognition by the VA's 1,200-plus attorneys and the service organization clowns that are supposed to represent the veteran. So here we truly have a stacked deck. And most importantly, veterans are powerless to help themselves, and there's no place that they can turn to for assistance. The service organizations are falsely perceived to be as American as apple pie, and even their own rank-and-file membership is unaware of the thievery of their leadership and the outrageous relationship with the VA detrimental to veterans' claims. And after more than 70 years of bureaucratic tyranny and abuse, we know that nothing is going to change for disabled veterans unless bright light, the great disinfectant, is focused upon the VA and the service organization's policies, practices, and procedures, which deny due process and fair, impartial considerations for the claims.
Well, Arthur, how can people get in touch with you? If you have a veterans out there that really feels they've been taken advantage of, how can they contact you and get some advice and thoughts?
Okay, we're very accessible. I'm Arthur Bernklau. That's Bernklau. And our organization is Veterans for Constitutional Law, Limited, LTD, period. And we're located at 112 Jefferson Avenue, and that's in Port Jefferson, New York. Port Jefferson, New York, the zip code is 11777, and believe me, all telephone calls and all mail will be answered. And our telephone number here is 631-474-4261. We do accept donations, which are fully tax deductible to you. And you can be sure that every cent that you do donate will go to help veterans, because nobody here gets salary or bonuses or anything. We are all volunteers, each and every one of us.
That's 631-474-4261, is that right?
Right.
All right, fine. And that's the telephone number if you want to get hold of Arthur. The problem we have, you know, is for whenever you have a massive bureaucracy, and you can see where the advantage would be to denying claims, because, of course, then you have more money for the bureaucracy. It's sort of like our school system, you know, the $27,000 for $270,000 for every class. Well, how much does the teacher get? She maybe gets $30,000, $40,000. What happens to the rest of it? It goes to the bureaucracy. And then, of course, they just keep wanting more and more money. But, of course, there is there was a situation where many people with legitimate claims are getting them, cut back. Now, are there instances where people will exaggerate claims to that they're not justified?
I've run across a few of them, but they're few and far between. But I have run across a few. But the VA likes to say, that veteran is a phony, or this veteran is a phony. And there are a few, but as I said, few and far between. I run across very few illegitimate
And so basically, cases. Of course, if you have something in your medical records that suggested you had a back injury when you were in the military, they're going to try to attribute to something else.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, what they try to do with me, initially they try to tell me my injury was congenital. Now, I played professional ball before I went into the service, and my job was communications. They had me climbing telephone poles. I mean, so, you know, the whole idea of it being a congenital defect was ridiculous. And as soon as I produced some x-rays from where I used to play ball, I got x-rays sent to me by the Red Sox chain. And it showed absolutely no problems, and that shut them up pretty quickly. They stopped saying congenital at that point.
Well, of course, but you were very, very fortunate to be able to get the claim taken care of. And but I really respect you for being willing to put yourself on the front lines of this battle to look after our veterans. Tragically, you know, most of the politicians really don't care. The veterans are a problem. They cost money.
Oh, yeah.
And yet, this is one of the expenses of a civilized society, is to look after your veterans.
Well, every once in a while, I get a redneck or somebody and a death threat over the phone, and it happens, and I usually say, you sound very angry. Come on over and let's talk. Bring your gun. And, of course, that ends the telephone conversation. But we're out there, and we're trying to help veterans achieve legal parity. And we're doing the work that should be done by the Disabled American Veterans, the American Legion, the VFW. And they were created initially to do this work, but somewhere along the way, their intentions got perverted by all the freebies they were getting. And that work is not being done by these people, but it's being done by independents like myself.
And he who pays the piper calls the tune. And as long as these veterans and organizations are getting freebies from the government, they're going to be carrying the government's water.
You see, those freebies are discretionary, at the discretion of the Secretary of the VA. If they want to give freebies, let them give the freebies, but don't make it discretionary, because they hold it over the service organization's head like a hammer and say, you do what we want. There's a judicial review bill coming out. We want you to speak against it, and we want to defeat this judicial review bill in Congress. And if you people don't speak against it, we're going to curtail some of the freebies that you get. And that's exactly what they do. They blackmail these veterans organizations.
Well, of course, your major thrust is to get access to the federal court system for veterans. They can have their case heard by a jury, a judge, rather than by a kangaroo court. Is that it?
That's it. It's only right, because the way things stand now, we are never going to get legal parity unless we get this into a real court. because you'll never get legal parity in these fraud of a court that the government is giving us, these administrative courts. It's a laugh. It's really a laugher. But not so funny to veterans.
Well, are you getting much coverage on the talk radio across America today?
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of coverage on radio and TV stations. So far, the big ones here in New York are afraid to have me on, like ABC, NBC, CBS. But I've been getting coverage from a lot of the smaller stations and the networks, and the word is getting out. The mail coming in here is enormous amount of mail coming in here, and I'm not even giving out my email address because it blows my computer out. One weekend, I had 1,189 emails came in, and I had to send emails out to everybody. Take me off your email list.
Well, I really admire what you're doing. I appreciate your work because I believe the men who fought for this country, whether I agree with the wars or not, they certainly deserve our thanks. And what we need to do, of course, is get the American people to understand that wars are never fought for the reasons that the men who are sent overseas to fight and bleed and suffer and die are told. And they're all, in my estimation, contrived for a purpose, a new world order, a new world religion. And once they've expended the men, once they've been used, why, they have no loyalty to them anymore. They don't need them anymore. And but we do. And a society that will betray its servicemen will eventually betray its citizens.
Exactly. And, I'd like to do a show with you sometime on the over-aggressive military recruiting in our high schools, which is a danger to this country. This plus, I've got cases in the senatorial and in the congressional record, outrageous cases that you wouldn't believe. And people will listen to this and they'll say, no, it can't be. They couldn't do anything like this. But these cases are real. I've got cases that'll make your hair stand on end for right out of the senatorial record.
Well, now, what sort of cases?
Okay, for instance, I got a case of a man who had an amputation done on his leg, and they insisted it was done between the right below the knee, when actually the man had his leg amputated up to the hip, and they paid him only, I believe, 30% at that time, because it was only below the knee, they claimed, and he was actually up to the hip. And he appeared at one rating board after another, and an expanded rating board and another one, and he went up to the Board of Veterans Appeals, and they found against him. And I have the testimony of a Dr. Pellerine, who has worked for many years as a doctor at the Board of Veterans Appeals. And Dr. Pellerine testified before the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, and finally they said, they proved it with an x-ray that was taken, that it was amputated almost to the hip, and they still refused to pay the man, even though clear and unmistakable error was proved. They paid the man right there upon that discovery from the date of the x-ray that they, from the date of the hearing, but they refused to pay him retroactively because they said, now listen to this, they weren't responsible. But somebody was responsible. The veteran wasn't responsible. At the time that he had the amputation, he should have been receiving his disability for that amputation up to the hip from that day on. They paid him only when they had discovered the x-ray that was finally brought in there. Just from that day that they discovered that x-ray and they put it into evidence. But they wouldn't pay him going back, proving that the amputation was done not below the knee, but up to the hip.
Well, I think there's a lot of skullduggery going on.
Oh, there. My God. It's unbelievable.
I've got
stories like you wouldn't believe.
Well, I'll tell you what, Arthur, we'll do another program one of these days. God bless you. Thank you for being with us.
I do thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night, Dr. Mann.
All right, well, that was Arthur Burnclough, and I hope you enjoyed the program. Think about these young boys. There have been over 1,000 casualties in the Middle East since this war began. Almost 300 dead now in total, and 1,000 casualties. over 1,000, as many of them with amputations. And they're going to spend the rest of their lives living with the pain and the disability. They deserve the best care that we can give them. But they're going to get into this Veterans Administration quagmire. We owe it to them, and of course we owe it to the men that fought and died in the past, to make sure that they're well cared for. And it's not going to happen unless you get involved in the political process. So pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.